Welcome, everyone, to the Cinefec Podcast, the podcast where me and some other douchebags talk about film, television, video games, and all of the things we're completely obsessed with. My name is Chris.
Hey, I'm Alex.
Hey, Alex. How's it going?
It's okay. Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. It's a late Sunday evening. I'm feeling a little tired. Getting ready for the next week of classes.
Yep.
Do you have a day off tomorrow, since it's supposed to be Columbus Day? Because I'm not sure.
Actually, I'm not sure either.
Because I've heard that my little sister has her day off, but
I don't think
I'm a big boy in college. I don't know if I do either, because I don't have like a calendar I can specifically look up for my school to see if they have this day off or not. So I'll have to find out tomorrow. Maybe I'll just drive into school and then see that nobody's there and ask to see if someone's at like the front desk or anything. And hey, maybe there won't be anybody there either.
Hmm.
That's just the risk I'm going to have to take.
Well, at least for me, because I'm living in the dorms, all I have to do is just bike to classes. And then like I could just bike back to the dorm if there's nothing. Which will be cool.
Yeah, I have a good 15-20 minute drive. It isn't too bad, but yeah, it's not too bad. There's no way for me to dorm nearby anyway, so that's my only option.
Okay, so we might as well get right to it. There were some games that we played. I mean, you've been playing through a few horror games, but that's not what we're talking about unless you have some things to add.
Yeah. I'll say that maybe next week I'll start getting into that more, but all I wanted to do this summer, all I wanted to do this October was I wanted to dive into some horror games that I've never played before on various different platforms, but as many that I can possibly find that can be played on the PC in some form. So, yeah, that's basically all I need to say about that. I'll get into that probably next week with specifics on certain games that I've started or completed and whatnot, but I have played one game to completion that has nothing to do with it being a horror game. However, it is a horror game in a different light.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that the game we're about to talk about is a horror game. And if you may recall, we did talk about this game in a previous episode. It's Spec Ops The Line. Mm-hmm. And it's been marketed as a military shooter, but really when you actually play it, it's more terrifying than lots of the modern horror games we get these days. So, I've already described it last time, so why don't you go and explain what Spec Ops is about this time?
To be honest, I'll probably be very bad at describing it. Basically, you play as, what is it, Sergeant Walker?
I don't remember his position.
Okay, so you play as Captain Walker, and you and a squad of two other people that are Lugo and... I forget the other guy's name.
I think his name was Alfonso something. I know something. Alfonso is his first name.
I feel like his name is never really brought up. But you and these two other guys are tasked to go into Dubai, and you're supposed to find and capture this guy named Conrad, who is a former member of the 33rd, which is like a military unit or something like that was sent into Dubai previously, but they went rogue and no one has heard of them since. So they go into Dubai to try to capture Conrad, and I'm very, very bad at this. You know I'm bad at this.
Yeah. All right, I might as well finish it then.
When it comes to explaining plot synopsis, I'm not the greatest at it, but like I honestly don't. I'll say one of my little opinions of it. When it comes to actually explaining the overall kind of story of it, it's a little bit vague. It's a little not really very focused on that. And that's kind of my problem with a lot of military movies or films and a lot of military games, is that it jumps around with a lot of stuff, but it also tries to introduce a lot of various types of terminology, words and whatnot that are usually military speak that I'm not too familiar with, and usually the general public isn't that familiar with. And it's a lot of terminology that's kind of thrown around that sometimes you kind of get lost with, or sometimes you'll eventually pick up and it won't be too easy, or it won't be too hard to follow. However, with Spec Ops, it's a far more story-driven military game than any ones in the past, like Call of Duty or anything like that. Like it's very different than your standard war shooter. It is far more story driven with the individual characters and how being dropped into a war zone takes a toll on people and what you have to
Yeah,
do.
and the thing is, like, each of the characters are all very defined, like, compared to a lot
Yes.
of the Call of Duty characters, and especially the Battlefield characters, which are basically nothing, pretty much.
I still don't feel like you really go in depth with any of the three individual characters that much, but you get a nice balance in between the three. So I never had too much of a problem with that. But I remember one of the complaints that I was trying to argue against you last time that you were trying to justify was that was similar to like the gameplay, but feeling very basic, kind of generic-y compared to the story, which has far more ambition than the actual gameplay does in its mechanics. Where when I finally got a chance to sit down, play the game from beginning to end in multiple sittings, I still stand by that the gameplay is very basic. It's very
It is very basic, but I
one
feel
of the
like it kind of has a purpose.
I still don't even feel like it necessarily has a purpose. It doesn't really, like, the specific gameplay doesn't really add up to anything. Yes, there are moments where it takes control from you and you're stuck into like these parts where you're just walking in a straight line or walking forward very slowly and stuff like that. I'm not even talking about that, but more just the general shooting and everything. It doesn't really pack like a lot of a punch. It just feels very eh, is the best way I can describe it. And one of the worst offenses that I can remember from the game is that it pits you in a lot of situations where you're just kind of stuck fighting waves upon waves of enemies,
Yeah,
and
a lot of very suicidal
It
waves.
doesn't. It doesn't many. It does that many times, and to be honest, I don't feel like it works very well. It's just. It feels more of like a cop out in terms of trying to create a set piece, and it's kind of lazy.
My personal argument is that the thing is, this is a game that's like legitimately about the horrors of war and how war is actually not a fun thing, and it could actually take a very dramatic toll on a person's mindset. So it'll be kind of hypocritical to make a war game that has that message but is also fun at the same time. So I feel like.
But I don't feel like making a war game that's supposed to be presenting some message, but also making it boring, because there are
I
parts
wouldn't
that
say it's boring because I feel like the
or
focus is always on the story and something is always happening,
and I
like, the
agree with
entire
that
time.
until I get to moments where it's just really long instances of shooting or shooting gameplay or like those wave parts, where I just kind of felt like it just kind of like becomes monotonous. It just becomes tedious, and I get a little bit bored with it. And in some instances, I had problems with how they handled the health system with your character in this game, where sometimes it feels like, okay, they're shooting me a lot, and I know when I can get behind cover. And then some instances, they'll just hammer me on with bullets, and I'll die way faster than I would have imagined I would have normally have died. And that happened many times throughout the game, which isn't too big of a deal, but it's just little tiny things that don't feel too polished when it comes to the gameplay, which, I mean, that's fine because it feels like they put a lot more of their focus and effort into creating a lot of really well done in-game choices and the way they handle the story and everything like that, which I feel like is the game's strong point. Whereas you were trying to describe to me back how they implemented like the complex choices and how it's not just kind
Yeah.
of black and white,
It's not just A or B,
press A to
like
do this, press.
grayscale and whatnot.
Yeah, like I remember, or I won't get into it just yet. I guess we'll talk about spoilers after. But yes, I understand what you were talking about now that I've played it. It is it pits the player solely into the actual game. The way you make these choices are dependent on if I shoot this person or if I walk away from this person, go a different path, if I choose not to go the lethal route, or if I choose to do this or do that, all purely through gameplay rather than
Yeah, through the mechanics.
through the mechanics of the game, through movement or through shooting or something like that. It's not just like a menu pops up and you press a button. It's
Yeah.
purely just how you are playing the game. Yeah. And I like that. It's something that I don't feel like has ever been done. It might have been done in the past, but it's
I
never.
think I actually played a little bit of Infamous earlier today, and there's a scene where you're able to
I know.
choose.
Yeah.
You're able to choose whether these survivors can like get this food supply, or you could just take the food supply for yourselves. And what I did was I basically just didn't do anything and didn't like attack any of the people, and then like that translated as a good choice. But the thing is, that was still a very binary choice where it was, black and white, good or evil, and it was very clear which was right and which was wrong. And it gets a little more tricky in Spec Ops.
Because the other thing I think that they do well in Spec Ops is that it's not very, one, it's not clear black and white, not good or evil, but also in terms of finding out how to make some of these choices isn't very clearly laid out. Like, there's ones where you have to take a different, like, you have to walk a different route or follow a character a different distance, but you don't really see that until you start trying to move around and trying to, like, figure out how you would approach it yourself, if that makes any sense. Like,
Yeah.
it's hard to. I know one instance that I could call to mind, but it would become a spoiler. So I'm not going to get into that just yet. But I feel like the first half of the game is very kind of standard military shooter. It doesn't.
Like it basically escalates as it
I
goes on.
feel like it really starts to pick up towards like the halfway point, and I feel it was related to a man named Gould. I feel like
Oh,
after you
Gould,
make
yeah.
that. After you make that choice is when I feel the game starts to really like ramp up and it starts to become its own. Where there was one instance that I won't even try to spoil too much, but it's one of those typical like a mortar sequence in a game where you're given like a computer where you control
Oh, yes, this scene, the white
the
phosphorus scene, without
yes,
saying
the white
anything.
phosphorus, where you're controlling like a reticle from like a bird's eye view, and you're aiming down and shooting at various enemies and stuff like that. It's a very typical set piece that's in a lot of Call of Duty games and a lot of other Medal of Honor, World War shooters, what have you. It's in a lot of first-person shooters, and when you're normally tasked to do that, you think, okay, it's just aim down, shoot, and everything. However, they have this really, really clever spin on this that I feel like is super subtle that I'm glad I was able to catch on this, that I feel like if most people were playing this, they probably won't realize like how subtle this is or what it's trying to do. Where you're in a first person perspective, and of course you're looking at like a television screen and like how or a monitor, if you will, like you are in all these games. However, in Spec Ops they have it so it's slightly a little bit farther, a little bit back, so you see the reflection of Walker's face, similar to how you would see the reflection of Samus Aran's face in Metroid Prime or something like that, whenever you shot a light near a wall and it has like a light reflection. Similar to that, where it sees like a reflection of his face. However, what they're trying to show is it's trying to show your wrongdoing, your evil staring back
Yes,
at you. And I like that, yeah.
yeah,
That
the
was one
whole thing is about like turning the player into a monster and then saying, "Hey, you're a bastard."
It's
But
kind of
even,
like it's kind
yeah.
of like you're looking at something you don't see it's bad until it's looking back at you, like almost if you're looking in the face of a mirror. And that was just one of those moments that I feel like they really nailed that down. It's something
Yeah,
that you never.
because the thing is like all of the main characters in this game do totally morally reprehensible acts of violence, especially that white phosphorus scene that just completely gutted me when you actually
Yes, the white box
see the
really hurts.
results of what happens after that. Like I felt like total shit after that sequence. Like I literally felt like I should take a shower when it was over. And it was a really, really emotional moment for me because it made me like feel responsible, and it made me actually kind of consider like the choices that you make in these types of military video games, and you kind of realize the lapses in moral logic in in those games, like Call of Duty.
And like that white phosphorus part, they do a lot of really cool stuff in terms of like environment. Whenever like they take control of the player and you're walking through like very slowly through like a different area or something like that, they use like visual effects and stuff like that to great effect in this game, where a lot of the environments are very I mean, in just the typical environments, when you're just in Dubai, look very expansive. They look very wide. You can see things from miles away, whether it be tall skyscrapers or huge sand dunes or something like that. And even in this scene like that, where they have fires blazing or like trees ablaze, buildings crumbling and falling apart and everything, like visually, they make what would otherwise be a very standard, kind of not that great looking engine out of the Unreal Engine, I think they were using, and they end up making it very visually dense, visually appealing. It looks nice, I'm saying. Is that on face value when you play like the demo, for instance, the game doesn't look that great, but when it gets to various set pieces, they make it look very, very good.
Yeah, and the other thing is that Dubai is actually a pretty creative location because the thing is they have all that sand everywhere, yet it's juxtaposed with the incredibly wealthy buildings
Yeah,
that are
really
everywhere.
huge, really grand
Lavish.
sized buildings. Yeah.
Yeah, there was actually one that kind of looked sort of like an aquarium. Do you remember this?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a hotel, but it looked almost like this gigantic aquarium. And it kind of and like when you have that very lavish exterior that's juxtaposed with the fact that like next to Dubai are all these slums and whatnot, and people would just find these luxury homes and end up squatting in them and whatnot. They actually did a lot of research for this game about
Yeah,
Dubai.
and speaking of like the aquarium building, there's a lot of instances in the game where you're going to be traversing inside of various buildings, whether they be like really huge hotels or aquariums, if you will. But the actual art direction inside these buildings is really great. Everything looks very different. It stands out a lot, and it feels very meticulous in its detail. It looks good, yeah. And then it juxtaposes with you being outside in the middle of the desert.
Yeah,
With
exactly.
your
And the
idea.
other like a neat little thing is that the level design is kind of tied with the themes because with the level design you're always descending in some sort of way, which is kind of like representative of the descent to madness that these characters have. And there's even like this bit where like you would be walking on the sand, then all of a sudden the sand would literally like turn into a gigantic sinkhole and it's trying to like it bring you down into the depths and stuff like that. So you can tell that these guys, the developers, I think they're called Jaeger, they
Yeah.
know what they're doing when it comes to telling a story and making every single aspect of the game kind of refer to that story.
And I feel that as a whole, I know that you really, really loved the game and you were very surprised by it. And I still would say that I'm surprised by it, but I don't feel like I loved it nearly as much as you did, where I'm very positive toward it. I feel like if anybody was specifically asking for a strong video game narrative, I would point them towards the direction of this game, where I feel like the game as a whole, as a game specifically, is just it's better than I was expecting, and that was mostly because I played it on PC, where I feel like it just feels better with a mouse and keyboard, which surprisingly, because I'm not too used to that, but I gave it a wing. And then I tried it and I ended up enjoying it. So I feel like, at least as a PC shooter, it's very competent. It's okay. I was able to get through it. But I feel like they do a lot of specific set pieces and a lot of narrative things in the game that really stand out. Like, there's a few moments that I could specifically call out that I feel like will stick out with me throughout the rest of the year that are probably the best that I've seen in games in quite some time. Yeah.
Yeah,
At least
so
it was definitely a surprise, yes.
Yeah, so you want to like delve into kind of like the big spoilery aspects about this game right now?
Yeah, that's fine by me. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a lot of interesting subtext going on with this game because to me this is kind of one of those like games about games, kind of like you know BioShock, spoilers for BioShock if you haven't played it, dear listener. But with the end of BioShock, you realize that all of those choices you made were actually part of basically the mind control of what was his name?
It was, oh shoot.
It was like it wasn't Atlas, I know that. Like, what was
Well,
his real name?
it was
Fontaine.
It's originally
Fontaine.
Atlas, but Fontaine, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and you realize, you know, the would you kindly and whatnot, and you real and it's kind of a comment on player choice in video games and how player choice is actually very limited and how you actually don't have choice.
Well, it's also a play on that whole overseeing person that's giving the player orders, as they do in many different games, and how
Yeah,
the actual
exactly.
person giving you orders is the villain, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, Spec Ops does a kind of similar thing too, but it doesn't just extend to games. It kind of ex it's actually also a critique, not just on military games, but a very military-centric culture as well, where there's this one video that I saw that I didn't see before we talked about it that one episode, but I really recommend it. It's called Errant Signal, Spec Ops: The Line. And it kind of talks about this theory that the guy brings up called moral absolutism, where basically all of the killing you do is okay so long as it's the bad guy and you're doing it for America and whatnot. And he basically kind of draws comparisons between that and also like some Navy ads about that show, like the Navy, a force of good, and stuff like that. And you kind of realize that moral absolutism is actually kind of bullshit when you actually consider the other factors that go on in war. And Spec Ops kind of gets into that with the when you realize that what you think is right actually makes things totally worse, such as the white phosphorus scene when you realize that, and this again, this is the spoiler section, and when you realize that by killing these soldiers that you think have gone rogue, you realize that there was some collateral damage in the form of these Dubai citizens that were hiding out in this cave of sorts that was underneath, and they all ended up getting killed because of your actions, which is like really devastating to the player because the things you weren't even expecting it, and all of a sudden you realize that it was pretty much your fault. And the reason why is because the game said told you that that was your choice. And it's kind of that same thing with BioShock, where there's a lot of moments in the game where Walker says, "We have no choice because Conrad is doing this to these people." And when you discover the truth about Conrad, and it's kind of a flip on the whole scapegoat that people put with video game mechanics, where, oh, I did all of that terrible stuff because the game told me to. So, what did you think of that? I'm kind of rambling.
Yeah, I would say that specifically with the white phosphorus stuff is that I think it's definitely playing on player expectations, at least when it comes to this genre, like I was bringing up with the whole war game thing, was that when you're given a sequence when you're controlling some kind of bird's eye view weapon of sorts, and all you see are just like a black grayish environment with white little blips that are supposed to be signaling or symbolizing as like human or enemy or tanks or vehicles or whatnot, that when you see that when you're playing these games, you're expecting, okay, I see these white dots, I just should start shooting. Because they never, normally other games like this never have like civilians or things that you're not supposed to shoot show up on the map, because they're specifically trying to have it as a visual cue to show that these are your enemies, shoot at these guys when you see them. So when they have it in this game, when they're actually civilians and you think that they're like rogue soldiers, but you can't tell because they're all just white blips on the screen that you shoot at them, and in reality you're actually killing all these civilians. It's playing with those player expectations when you don't realize that, oh wow, I just killed a bunch of people. I just
Yeah,
killed a bunch of people
basically you
that
have
weren't trying to
to
kill
kind
me.
of realize, you have to kind of, it's kind of a comment on how some people end up applying that video game logic to the real world and how that could actually be kind of damaging to the mind in some sort of way. Because I totally lost my train of thought because there's a lot of stuff going on, but yeah.
Okay, one interesting thing was that you were bringing up the whole "would you kindly," and that
Yeah.
and the same thing with BioShock is that they go back to various parts in the game where he says "would you kindly," trying to remind the player of those instances where he was told to do one thing, and he said "would you kindly," and that made him do a specific decision, basically showing that he had that that Fontaine had mind control over the main character, and how in Spec Ops: The Line he's going back to all these instances where you're making all these individual complex player choices in the game, and he's trying to show you what was actually happening compared to what you were originally seeing when you were playing. It's similar to the two guys that are being hung on nooses on the bridge. So then you realize that the two guys that were originally being hung up there on the bridge by the noose was that they're actually dead the entire time, and that Walker was just talking to himself, like he was losing his mind slowly over time, and that he imagined that two guys were living there and they were struggling to stay alive by hanging up there, and you were supposed to kill them when actually you were just shooting two dead bodies. And I like the way they did that. I like the way that they were pl or the game calls back to Walker when you were originally thinking you were doing all this stuff that the game was trying to tell you to do, when actually you're just kind of slowly going crazy, but you don't realize that until the very end of the game.
Yeah,
But
because the big twist is that Conrad, the guy who you're trying to capture throughout the whole game, he's pretty much been long dead ever since the game has pretty much started. And when you were talking to Conrad through like an intercom or something, that was pretty much just Walker kind of talking to himself and kind of creating a scapegoat in order to make himself feel like a hero and do supposedly heroic things, when in actuality he was just making it worse. And the thing is, he didn't have a scapegoat anymore because there was never a scapegoat. It was all him. It was all his choice. And that's kind of a commentary
Which
on
leads
video games as a whole.
into this whole finale at the very end of the game, when you're inside of the final, I forget what the
The
building is
Burj
called.
Khalifa, like the tallest building in Dubai. It's
Yes,
also the tallest building in the world.
and you're going inside there, and you're going up through the elevator up to the final, like to the top floor, so you're able to meet up with Conrad, and you end up having this discussion with him in front of a painting, and then after that you realize that you were still talking to yourself and that he's been dead this entire time, and he shot himself on a chair right up in this beautiful view of Dubai. But after that you have this sequence where Conrad is still talking to you as kind of like this
Kind of like a Tyler
hallucination.
Durden-esque kind of figure.
Yes, like a Tyler Durden-esque like hallucination. And probably one of the most clever things that I realized like a couple seconds after it had started, but when I realized it just kind of felt like that oh shit moment, was that when you're talking to Conrad and you also see a reflection of Walker almost like in a mirror, it's like you're in this third person over the shoulder view as you're looking at this mirror, and you see Walker on the left side and you see Conrad on the right side, and Conrad is aiming this gun at you, threatening to kill you if you don't make a decision to kill yourself or to kill him, to which is either to showing to accept your fate and what you've done and then pay for that, or to kill what you had as the original problem and then live out your life even though you know that you've committed all these horrible, horrible acts. And I liked how they implemented that into the game, similar to how they implemented the guys on the bridge, and similar to how they implemented to the good choice or the Sergeant Good, whatever his name was, earlier on in the game. Whereas you're pointing up a gun, and depending on where you're aiming at, you can aim it at yourself, and it actually points the gun up at his chin, or you aim it at Conrad, and you can shoot him. And you get two different endings dependent on whether or not you shoot yourself or if you shoot Conrad.
Yeah, and the thing is,
Whether,
one of
but
the endings actually has
I'll,
an epilogue.
it does, yes, and I'll get to that. But I've tried all the different options that I possibly could. I tried shooting. I got the shoot yourself ending, I did the shoot Conrad ending, and I even tried doing Conrad shooting yourself, which ends up getting the same ending as if you shot yourself normally. However, I was very surprised that they end up doing an epilogue thing if you shoot Conrad, and it ends up picking up at a time skip, I don't know how long specifically after, where somehow Walker was still surviving out in Dubai for quite a while, and then the army ends up sending out a bunch of military troops out to search for you, and then they end up finding you, and they send out a bunch of guys and Humvees, and they come out and they're trying to get you back into the car to bring you back to
Yeah,
safety.
it basically brings up three all new endings where basically these guys come at you, and then all of a sudden your crazy, insane self, you start like aiming your gun at them, and you can choose whether you shoot them or you give the gun to them and decide to like go back.
Because when they approach you, they realize that you're still armed. So they're trying to calm you down to not arm you. And this is the point where you make the decision of, okay, do I want to just let him take the gun from me, or do I want to start shooting everybody? And then when you start shooting everybody, you could actually survive. You can kill all of them and then finish it and get a different epilogue, or you can decide for them to kill you.
So it's basic. Yeah, it's really clever how they do
It
that.
was it, I was expecting to do this the typical two endings, but what I was surprised is they just like they you get you, you if you choose one ending, you're just like open up with all these other options to get an even more advanced ending. And I don't know, I like that kind of attention to detail, even if like the choices that you make beforehand throughout the game don't really affect the actual ending of the game. I
No,
like
they
that they
don't,
still open it up to get different
but
stuff.
it
Yes.
basically
Well,
allows the game to
isn't
have kind of a focus, because it wouldn't make sense if like it like went all these branching paths, yet it's still like, yeah, you get the idea.
But one thing I was interested in was the whole thing with the gold choice that I keep bringing up was that I want to know what you did when it came to that one, because I
Was
feel like
that the
one of
one
the
where you could
things.
choose whether you rescued gold or whether
No,
you
that's the one where you would choose to rescue the hostages that Gold is keeping as the hostage, or you can choose to shoot Gold, where Lugo decides to shoot him in the face with a sniper rifle. So the choice was either to shoot him or to evade him, like walk around him sneakily and then go to the hostages and then rescue them.
Yeah, the thing is, like, I got kind of confused then, and the thing is, like, it's really kind of sneaky with how what happens is that you would kind of act out of impulse, and you would end up not doing what you wanted to do because you would kind of be confused with
And
what you were
it
doing.
saves instantly. It saves as soon as you make that choice.
Yeah,
Which can
exactly.
really
Because
fuck you up.
it's kind of about like how, once you make that choice, it's set, kind of like real life,
But I'm
basically.
asking, what choice did you make? I'm assuming you messed up and you ended up shooting him.
Yeah, I wanted to go to the hostages, but basically I ended up accidentally alerting the guards, and they're like, "Oh no." And then they basically shot Gould and they shot the hostages, and I pretty much screwed up the whole thing.
Okay, so I ended up shooting the ho I mean, never mind. I ended up saving the hostages. I ended up ma making the choice to sneakily get him and then save the hostages, and you end up finding that Gold was shoot regardless, or he was shot at regardless and died. But you did save the hostages.
Oh.
And I think, and from what I remember, I remember the hostages looked vaguely familiar, or vaguely similar to the guys that are hung up by the nooses on the bridge. I'm not entirely sure. One of
Huh.
them looked very similar, but I could be wrong.
If there's only one flaw I can come up with in the story, it's that like it can get once you realize that like Walker was being totally insane, it gets a little hard to buy that your two squad mates would still go along with your orders, even though he
Yeah.
shows clear signs of psychosis. But it didn't bother me too much, and because the thing is, I totally had no idea about it, and I wasn't expecting that twist at all, so I pretty much bought it the whole way through. So I could.
You bought it the whole way through until the very end when it's explained to you, and that's where you're
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I don't know.
So like once actual thought is applied to it, the cracks kind of seep in, but the thing is, the twist ending does have a lot of thematic importance, which I think is more important than, oh, this wouldn't happen in real life, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And those are the kind of nitpicks that I can let slide because they let the actual narrative be
Yeah,
rather than
so
being entirely comprehensive. So yeah.
yeah, this is a game that really does not like Call of Duty. Like it's actually very, very mean-spirited towards the pretty much military FPS genre. It's basically kind of an indictment of that sort of genre. Like very, very
And it sucks
critical.
because I feel like and it sucks because I feel like the way it was marketed and the way the demo ended up playing out and everything is that I feel like the general populace saw it as a typical Call of Duty clone and then didn't buy it because it sold very poorly.
Yeah, dude, it's such a shame too.
It got stuck in a really horrible release spot and
Because the thing
came
is,
out
they
right
can't
around Mech
really
Mania too.
reveal like what makes it so different from the other ones without
And
like giving
that's the
away.
tough part, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like Cabin in the Woods, where you think, oh, everyone thinks it's just another Cabin in the Woods story, yet you actually watch it and it's nothing like that at all. And that movie, it did decently at the box office, but it wasn't a hit either.
So yeah, either way, Spec Ops: The Line is a really good game. Not the greatest game, but a really good narrative. I'd really recommend it for people that want a game with a good story. I
or
something
personally
that
think.
feels like it's not the standard kind of shooter.
Yeah, I personally think it's the best video game story since BioShock, actually. I liked it that much.
Wow. It's high praise then.
It's fantastic. In fact, I actually, like, I mentioned this on the forum, but I wrote this really long analysis on the game, and basically it was so good that two of the developers of the game, they retweeted it on Twitter. It's like, hey, this is really cool. You did a good job. And that kind of made me squee a bit.
You loved it when people recognize you. Recognize
Yeah, because I'm a
your
whore.
hard work. Yeah.
Total whore.
I'm glad I
So.
was able to pick it up at like $7.50 from that Gamefly sale. Totally worth it. I was waiting for that game to drop down in price that far.
I thought it was worth it even at $30.
It probably would have been, but under $10 is like a
Yeah,
steal.
that's a steal, exactly. You were
One
wise to
final
wait.
thing is, did you ever get a chance to try the multiplayer? Because I did. It
No,
feels
I didn't.
it feels very tacked on. It
Yeah,
doesn't feel like it
pretty sure
has
it
any
was.
life or anything. Surprisingly, there's still some people playing it, but the game, like the actual multiplayer, isn't that fun. It's just trying to ape on the Call of Duty
Yeah, it's weird
leveling
because
up
the
progression system
actual
with every
single
game.
player, it's very critical on military shooters and Call of Duty, yet the multiplayer segment, it's pretty much exactly what it's trying to criticize. And you can tell that like they didn't want it there, but like the publisher or something probably told them, if you don't put in a multiplayer like every other military thingamajig, then we're gonna scrap the project. So
So yeah,
there's probably
I definitely
just
want to get the game for the multiplayer. Not at all.
nope, don't do that.
All right.
So our game discussion is done.
Was short.
Yeah, and I felt like it was gonna be more like I would end up sounding more smart, but I ended up kind of rambling a bit. I ended up kind of like tripping on my own words and whatnot.
Hey, I know that you finished Uncharted 3, and I know you really like
Oh,
that.
yeah, I really like
You wanted to
that.
bring up briefly.
Oh, I guess I could bring it up briefly. Yeah, Uncharted 3, there were a lot of people who said, oh, it's kind of disappointing compared to the second one. I actually thought it was just as good as the second one. I wouldn't say it was better because, like, it's basically more of the same of Uncharted 2, but the thing is, Uncharted 2 was so polished and fun and kind of like sublimely exciting. Few games are able to give me an adrenaline rush the way Uncharted could because of its set piece moments, and that's Uncharted's strong suit, and Uncharted 3 delivered on all of that. So I would definitely say it's just as good. And there are also a bunch of gameplay additions that make it kind of easier, like instead of having to dodge grenades, you're given the option to throw them back, which is pretty cool. And there's also a lot of additions to melee combat that make it more fluid. And another good addition is that the story, like all of the Uncharted stories, they're all fine. They're all kind of fun, but they don't really have substance or any emotional sort of impact of any kind. Whereas Uncharted 3, you actually get some sort of backstory on Nathan Drake and his relationship with the old guy who's with you, Sully, and they actually kind of have a father-son thing going on, and it's really interesting, and it pays off emotionally as well, and all that stuff was really well done. So because of that, I think I'm kind of in the minority when I think that Uncharted 3 is slightly better than Uncharted 2 just because of those additions, even though Uncharted 2 has better pacing and has better set pieces and whatnot, which is pretty much what people play Uncharted for. But yeah,
So
I liked
I've
it.
heard through the grapevine that the grenade spam in this game is really bad.
I honestly didn't have a problem with it,
Yeah,
especially
I
because
figured
you're able
if
to
I
throw
played it, I
things
probably wouldn't
back.
have a problem with it either. I mean, the only time in a game where I feel like grenade spam was awful, or it was very annoying, or it was a case that it ruined the game for me, was, speaking of military shooters, Call of Duty World at War. Hated that game. Most and well, the single player specifically hated it, but I hated it specifically because of the grenades. Because I remember trying it on the harder difficulties, not on veteran, but up there, maybe like normal hard or something like that, and it was pretty brutal.
Yeah, if you play
Just throw
Halo on legendary difficulty, the grenades, they throw grenades recklessly, and
Sa
it's insane.
What's even worse is that they're sticky grenades.
Yeah, exactly. So,
So yeah,
yeah, recommend.
it was surprising to hear that you liked Uncharted 3 that much, because I feel like the general reception to it was that
It's kind of.
it felt very similar to 2.
Well, the thing is, it is similar, but once you kind of
The same.
accept that, then you kind of. And you actually start to have fun with it, then it's a really good time.
So it's
And
kind of
it's just
different.
as well crafted.
So it would have been kind of a different thing compared to like Uncharted 1 to 2, where Uncharted 1 is like a fairly fun, like Indiana Jones styled adventure game. And then Uncharted 2 is just kind of like expanding on it in every possible way and making it tons better in terms of its
Yeah,
set
way
pieces and
better.
gameplay and the motion capture and everything. And then Uncharted 3 is just like, yep, it's just more of that.
Because the things they improve so much with Uncharted 2 that there's really no more room for improvements because they did that much improving. So, yeah, I can kind of see why, but I still really enjoyed it. Yeah, Uncharted 3, I recommend it.
So, for movie-wise, I know you got to see a bunch recently. I really didn't, but I'd like to talk about my thing a little bit later.
Okay. Yeah. So, Frankenweenie. This is Tim Burton's newest movie, and
Oh,
it's a
hey.
yeah. Oh, hey, Tim Burton has a new movie, even though he had one last summer called Dark Shadows that was actually really bad.
I forgot completely about that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
So
It's not
what's
good.
Frankenweenie?
Frankenweenie, on the other hand, it's good. It's quite good, and the reason why is because with Dark Shadows, it kind of felt sort of lazy and not much care was put into it, and that's the exact opposite with Frankenweenie, where it's kind of lovingly crafted and it feels very personal to Tim Burton because it's kind of a horror movie homage. It's not just with the whole Frankenstein thing, because the whole movie is about a young Victor Frankenstein who his dog dies and then he discovers the power of electricity and decides to resurrect his dead dog with it, and shenanigans ensue. That's basically the plot. But Frankenstein isn't the only thing that's homage. There's also a lot of references to Nosferatu and American Werewolf in London, and some references that you wouldn't even pick up that are very, very
Yeah,
subtle, but they're
I've
all
heard
really.
there's a lot of monster movie references, a lot of stuff that are very obscure, which sounds very interesting to me.
Yeah, like the Nosferatu reference, it's basically that shot of the shadow creeping up the staircase. And anyone who's never seen Nosferatu, they wouldn't get it. They would just think, oh, it's just a normal shot of shadows going up a staircase. But if you actually saw it, you'd be like, oh, hey, that's Nosferatu. That's cool. And the thing is, all of the references, they don't feel forced in any way. They all feel very organic to the plot. Like the transformation sequence from that feels a lot like an American Werewolf in London. Like, it's not there just to feel like an American Werewolf in London reference. The thing is, there already needed to be a transformation sequence to begin with, but they made it look like an American Werewolf in London to give horror movie fans some incentive. So it all feels very organic and loving and uncynical. So,
Cool.
yeah, the whole movie it's pretty funny, it's pretty cute. The voice acting is really solid, especially Martin Landau, who plays the science teacher. He plays a very Vincent Price-esque figure with that Vincent Price voice and an elongated face. It's really fun to watch. And also, the movie is completely in black and white, which is really interesting considering it's a kids' movie.
Yeah,
And
and looking back on that, I don't know how did that play out? Did you see it in 3D or did you see it in 2D?
I saw it in 2D.
Okay, how? Oh, never mind then. I was gonna say, 'cause I want to know what it's like seeing a black and white movie in 3D
I'm
now that
pretty sure
actually
it's
works
just
out.
the
So I'm
same as
wondering.
watching a 3D color movie, except in black and
Yeah,
white.
'cause I just can't help but feel like maybe if somebody was watching a 3D movie that was in black and white, it might be like straining on the eyes or something. I don't know. I know that
Citizen
3D with like
Kane
color
in
movies
3D?
can be.
Anyone? Anyone?
Ooh, that just sounds weird. So continue. What else did you like about it? Because I know you're very positive about it, yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm very positive because
Like
the thing is,
everybody else was.
it's good and it's fun and it's really cute, but the thing is, there isn't really much going on. Like, I would say a movie like Paranorman, that movie is also cute and fun, but it also has kind of some subtext and intelligence and satire going on underneath the whole surface of it. Whereas with Frankenweenie, it's pretty much just light and fun, and that's pretty much it. And it's not bad at all, and it's very well crafted, and the stop motion animation is gorgeous to look at, but there isn't really much to chew on, basically. But, like,
Yeah, and that
once
was what
you.
I was kind of worried about a little bit.
Yeah,
Just, it
because
just
the
seemed like
thing
a pain.
is, one of the main problems is that, and this is a problem with a lot of movies that are basically short films that were expanded into feature length films, is that there's padding that goes on. And you realize that, oh, he didn't expect to have this turned into a full-length feature film, so he ended up having to add this entire subplot about a science fair and all of these kids trying to make these wacky experiments, and then they become jealous of Victor's dead dog coming back to life, so they end up trying to ape his idea, and a whole bunch of monster mayhem ensues at the end. And, it's all cute and fun to watch, but at the same time, there's not much of a point to it. So, yeah, the actual plot itself, it's pretty padded, even for a movie that's literally like 80 minutes long, from what I remember. So it's actually really short, and it still feels kind of padded, and that's pretty much because it's a short film that was expanded to a feature-length film. So, but still, it's entertaining and it's fun. And it's better than most of the other.
Has there ever been, can you think of a short film that ever worked better in its transition to a full-length feature film?
I'm not sure. I'm
Yeah, I'm
trying to
not really sure
think.
either.
There's a lot of horror movies that start out as short films. Did you see the trailer for that one movie that was produced by Guillermo del Toro called Mama?
Yeah, I talked to you about it, I think,
Yeah,
last week.
exactly.
Something like
Well,
that.
that
Or
was
sometime.
actually based on
Probably
a
not on the
short.
show. Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's being ex it was picked up by Guillermo del Toro, and he was like, "Hey, that's cool. Let's see a full length version of it." And now we've got the full length version starring Jessica Chastain.
I did not know that. It's interesting, actually.
So we'll
I
see how.
mean, I know there's been short films in the past that
Yeah,
have
I
been
know. I
decent.
can't believe it's slipping
Nothing's really
from him.
coming to mind, yeah. Oh, well.
So Frankenweenie is fun and cute, and you should take your kids to see it because it if your kid really likes Halloween, take them to see this instead of Hotel Transylvania, which made way more money than
I don't
Frankenstein.
know. I'm not gonna. I still need to see Hotel Transylvania because
I heard it was bad. I heard it was okay, but
I'm
I'm
not
pretty
gonna
sure.
shirk it off just yet because I really, really do love Genndy Tartakovsky, and I feel like he has this. He has a specific style of humor, a specific type of humor, a specific way he goes about action or some forms of drama, and I feel like I don't know. I just feel like either something went wrong with Hotel Transylvania, or the way that people went in expecting it, maybe got something different and they didn't end up liking
Maybe it's because
what
a
they.
lot of
I
critics
don't
are
know.
biased
I just feel like it's biased towards who?
towards hating Adam Sandler, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean I could see that. I'm still interested to see Hotel Transylvania. So hopefully either I see it on in the theaters or I see it on DVD, whichever. I still want to give it a chance.
Yeah, I heard it wasn't terrible. It's just that it pretty much just got middling reviews. It made a lot
Yeah.
of money though, so maybe Genndy Tartakovsky can have the clout to make something better.
I hope so, especially after his most recent show got canceled not too long ago, and then he
Yeah, I
has another
forgot what the
show
name of
going.
that show was. It was like
It was
Bio something.
Symbiotic Titan. It
Symbiotic
was
Titan.
it it wasn't that great of a show. It was okay. It was at least fun,
I just want him
but it didn't have to.
to bring back Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends sometime, because that was a great show.
Yeah, I don't know if they're gonna bring that back. I don't think. I mean. Yeah, I don't feel like he's going to be doing too much at Cartoon Network, at least not after Symbiotic Titan, but we'll see. I don't know.
You
That's
know.
why I still want to give Hotel Transylvania a chance because I can't help but feel like maybe the reason why Symbiotic Titan didn't turn out so hot was because maybe he was focusing more on working on the film rather than he was working on the show. Because the film, of course, when you're doing an animated film, that's taking a good like 5 years of your life away trying to focus on that because those have really, really long processes of creating the film and making all the animated pieces and then putting it all together and then releasing it. It takes a long time rather than regular films.
Yeah,
So I can't,
definitely.
I some part of me just feel like he just was putting too much more into that rather than the show, or maybe vice versa. I don't know. I'll see whenever I get a chance to see it.
Who knows?
So what's the next you got to see, Chris?
Oh, you wanted to talk about the other movie I saw?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, so
I think we can leave Killer Joe at last because I feel like that's going to be a very
which
interesting
one? The other
discussion.
movie I saw in theaters or the one that I caught on DVD?
Caught on DVD.
Okay, good, because that's a more interesting conversation.
Okay.
So, there's not many Australian horror movies, if you think about it. Can you name an Australian horror movie?
Yes, I can. Whatever is that one about the kids getting abducted by that one Australian like poacher? It came out like in 2005 or
Wolf Creek?
2006. Wolf Creek, thank you. There we go.
Oh, people hated that
That's
movie.
I mean, the things that I've seen of it seem really graphic, but I don't know if I've heard people hated it, but I've heard it's pretty crazy.
Roger Ebert gave it the 0-star rating.
Well, Roger Ebert in re recent years, I don't know. I still have immense
But there's a
respect.
lot of other people that hated it that much as well. But
Yeah.
yeah, that should give you an idea.
But either way, yes, that I can think of an Australian horror movie. There you go.
Okay. But that's pretty much one. Whereas, like with Japanese horror movies, you could probably think of maybe five. Same with Koreans and Spanish horror movies and,
Or
Italian horror
American
movies.
horror movies
Yeah, maybe American horror movies. Who knows?
that come out a dime a dozen throughout the year.
Yeah, British horror movies as well. But yeah, not that many Australian horror movies. So this movie that I caught up with was an Australian horror movie. It was originally out in 2009. But it never came out in America because the MPAA was very squeamish with its subject matter. But now it's finally gotten out. There's a rated version, and I think there's an unrated version. I am not sure which version I saw. It was probably the rated R version. But whatever. Basically, the hook, and this is a really disturbing movie. So basically, what happens is that there's this kid named Brent. He's kind of a loner in high school, basically. He has very long hair, is into thrash metal, that sort of thing. Kind of cuts himself sometimes. And basically, this one very shy, seemingly unassuming girl says, "Hey, would you want to go to the prom with me?" And he politely declines. Later on, while he's walking his dog, he ends up getting kidnapped, and he wakes up tied to a chair with a creepy man staring at him from across the table. And he realizes that the girl he declined to the prom and her father have kidnapped him and are torturing him in order to give Daddy's little girl her special night.
What a
So,
loving father.
yeah, what a loving father. He gives his daughter what she wants.
Oh, yes.
So yeah, already that plot line, pretty disturbing if you think about it, because it's about a teenage girl who's pretty much willing to torture someone just so she can have a prom night with a boy she has a crush on. It's a kind of a clever spin on the teen prom night movie sort of thing. But then some other twists, which I dare not give away to you, are brought up in the film. And basically, when you see this movie, you think there's no way this movie could get more disturbing, and it ends up getting way more disturbing. I was honestly really, really uncomfortable with this movie, but in a good way. I think this is a fantastic horror film, except it's fantastic because it's unpleasant in every respect. And it's not unpleasant in the same way that I hear Human Centipede 2 is unpleasant, where everyone just ends up just hating it because it's nothing but terrible gore and whatnot. But The Loved Ones, there's a lot of torture, there's a lot of blood, and a lot of disturbing subject matter, and maybe even some hints of incest as well. Really disturbing. But at the same time, there's also a lot of substance too, where it kind of comments on sort of the teenage mind, the loss of innocence, the relationship between teenagers and their parents. And it's a surprisingly emotionally satisfying movie, and I highly recommend it to anyone who really wants something different and new in the horror genre.
And I remember ever since I saw the first trailer like months ago, I was really excited to see it, hoping that it was going to come to a theater near us because I think it got picked up by the same distribution studio that picked up Paranormal Activity
Yeah,
originally
it's called
and reaped the
Paramount
success from it.
Insurge.
Yeah, I think it was their independent thing that they created a few years back.
Yeah,
And
unfortunately, it's the same studio that distributed The Devil Inside, which is awful.
sadly,
Yeah.
yeah. with the loved ones, and it's pretty good pickup. And I was expecting it to be releasing in some theaters near me, but sadly it never did. So I'm just gonna have to check it out on video on demand or on DVD or wherever. I
Yeah,
want to
you
see
could
it though.
on Netflix right now through the disc system. Except the thing is, if you're squeamish, just don't watch it. Just
Is most of the squeamish stuff mostly just kind of like him being strapped to a chair for being tortured? Because that's what I got from the trailer, or that's
yeah,
what I
there's
got
a
out of
lot
it.
of that, but like I said, there are some interesting plot developments that are introduced later on where, like, it's squeamish not because you're seeing disgusting things, but because just the subject matter is just.
What because of the things that aren't happening on the screen. What isn't being shown?
All the stuff that's being implied is very disturbing. There's a lot of implications to stuff about the father and daughter's relationship and some weird things going on with the mother. Like, you wonder, like, where's the mother in all this? And you realize, oh, that's really bad. And yeah, it's a deeply disturbing, uncomfortable movie. And I honestly think that this is the most morally responsible horror movie to come out in a long time because it treats each of its characters with empathy. Like, none of them are just rag dolls just to be tortured like the Saw movies. Like, basically, the main character, Brent, sure, he's kind of an emo kid who cuts himself, but they establish him enough that he has reason enough to be kind of an emo kid
He
because.
has he's got a reason to cut himself.
Yeah, he's kind of stricken with guilt because of something that happens in the beginning of the movie, which I, again, I won't spoil. But yeah, and the thing is that empathy also extends to the main villain as well, the girl who kidnaps him, whose name is Lola. And by the end of the movie, she's treated not as a villain, but as a victim of her father's overbearing love for her. And it ends up being really interesting with that. And it's really intellectually and even emotionally satisfying in that way. But again, it's so disturbing that, like, I honestly kind of don't want to watch it again, but I know that I'm going to because I'm going to participate in a live tweeting event soon. So that will be interesting.
Well, man, it looks like I'm definitely gonna check it out then.
Oh,
A lot of that
do,
stuff just
because it's a great
sounds right
movie.
up my alley. Yeah, it sounds like it is.
So, speaking of disturbing movies, you saw something.
Yeah, I happen to see Killer Joe, which is the new William Friedkin film. Which, hey, you might not remember his name, and you might actually remember it, but you just don't know it. He was the director of The Exorcist in The French Connection many, many, many years back, and I believe The Rules of Engagement as well. However, since
Yeah.
then, he's done quite a few projects, but he hasn't done any truly notable ones. The only ones that are actually the only one that I can specifically remember that came out of past
The
over like
past
the past few
decade or
years ago
so.
was Bug.
Yeah,
Not even the
but.
past decade or so was, but the past few years ago was Bug, which starred Michael Shannon and Ashley Judd.
Yeah.
And interest and coincidentally enough was that movie was based off of a play that was written by a screenwriter by the name of, please help me
Tracy
out here,
Letts.
Chris, Tracy Letts, who happened to also write the play for the movie that I'm going to be talking about, Killer Joe.
Which I also saw.
Yeah, you saw way back, and now
Yeah,
I got a
way
chance to
back. So my memory
want to
may
see
be
it.
a little hazy, but.
I think things might come back as I talk about it. But so I wasn't expecting this first and foremost to come to my art house theater because I didn't know they were going to be showing NC-17 movies. But now after this has premiered there, surprisingly enough, they
Well, the
do.
thing is, it's an NC-17 movie, but it has Matthew McConaughey and Emile Hirsch and Thomas Hayden Church, which are. Like, Matthew McConaughey is a big name, and Emile Hirsch and Thomas Hayden Church, they're recognizable enough. So,
Yes.
yeah.
But it's mostly Matthew McConaughey's star power. But the thing is that most theaters ban any kind of NC-17 movies just because they don't see the point in it. Because NC-17 movies are very
Restrictive.
unmarketable.
Yeah.
They're very restrictive, they're unmarketable. Very few people can even get in. I mean, already Hollywood usually tries to limit a, or try to downgrade a movie, you could say, from an R rating to a PG-13 rating just so they could get more tickets. And NC-17 is as restrictive as possible. No one under the age of 17 can get into the movie.
Yeah,
So,
not even with parent permission.
through your words of what you've told me in the past, even as very indifferent on the movie as you've been, I was very interesting, and I was very interested. I was
I
very
wouldn't say I
interested to
was
see
indifferent,
what
but
was
I
so
was
crazy
very
about it.
curious.
Yeah, so I was very interested to see what was so crazy about it, why it was NC-17, why Matthew McConaughey, Neil Hirsch would have chosen a project like this, why William Friedkin would have decided to direct a movie like this. And I'll tell you, oh my God.
Oh my God.
I saw this on Tuesday, and for like 3 days onward, I was so unsure about this movie. Like there was a period after I'd seen Looper that the past weekend where I was just like obsessing over it, and it was all I was thinking
Yeah,
about. It was all I was
exactly. It kind of
talking
consumed
to
your
other people.
mind because there's
So
lots to
yeah.
talk about.
So I really needed something to really get my mind off of it. So I wanted to see Killer Joe, and boy did that get my mind off of it. Because that's all I've been thinking of for the past few days. And I've finally been able to nail down my thoughts of it. If you want to, can you maybe explain the plot synopsis of it? Because there's a little things that I was a little bit confused on seeing it that I don't feel like were that well explained, like the whole relationship with Emile Hirsch and his real mother and things like that.
Okay. Apparently, I'm way better at explaining plot synopses
Yeah.
as
I'll
exemplified
have to work on
last
that.
time.
Yeah. I'll have to get better at that.
Okay, so Killer Joe follows Emile Hirsch as this part. He's the son of this family of redneck hillbillies in a trailer park out in Texas somewhere, and they're very idiotic, reprehensible people. The kind of protagonists you don't see a lot of in movies these days.
They're almost even like caricatures to, in a sense,
Yeah,
of these
exactly.
pigs.
They're
Yeah.
extremely idiotic to a point that, like, it's kind of fun to watch, but at the same time, not. So, yeah. Basically, what happens is, he and the rest of the family don't like the original mother. Like, basically, the father wants her out of the picture, the stepmother wants her out of the picture, the daughter even comments saying that's a good idea, and Emile Hirsch decides to put some action on this plan to basically have her killed so that $5,000 of insurance money of some sort can tr be transferred to their family. To do
But
this, instead of
specifically, it has to be transferred to the daughter named Dottie. That's the
Yeah,
real. That's
to
the
the
kicker.
daughter
Yeah.
Dottie. Yeah, exactly. Who's played by Juno Temple, who you may remember having an extremely brief role in The Dark Knight Rises, but you'll barely remember her because she almost had nothing to do with that movie. But yeah, so she was in that. So basically, instead of deciding to kill the original mother for themselves, what they do is they hire a professional to do it for them so that they want to make doubly sure that nothing gets screwed up and whatnot, and they hire this man who goes under the moniker Killer Joe, who's played by Matthew McConaughey. And basically, Matthew McConaughey's Killer Joe is basically a very, he's kind of like a snake oil salesman, where he just talks in that Matthew McConaughey-esque way where he just goes, "All right, all right, all right," and in that voice,
He's
and he's
very,
very
very
persuasive,
charismatic. Yeah.
very charismatic. Even when he's talking about some very dark, dastardly deeds that must be taken care of and whatnot. So they hire him, but the thing is, he ends up kind of delaying it, and he basically asks for kind of a, I don't know what to call it. What was it called again? He
It's it.
asks for kind of an incentive
Oh,
or
and a retainer. It's
a
he's
retainer.
requiring a
Yeah,
retainer
retainer.
because Emil Hirsch can't own up and pay the money up front.
Yeah, he can't own up and pay the money up front because, they're a trailer park. They're pretty poor.
The
Okay,
money
not
that
pretty. They're.
they were gonna pay Killer Joe is the exact same money that they're gonna get from the job, from the insurance policy.
Yeah, they did not
They were
think
gonna
it
use
through.
that money to pay. No, because they are stupid hicks.
Stupid Hicks. Exactly. Basically, this retainer is in the form of Dottie, the Juno Temple character, the daughter, and basically, Killer Joe ends up kind of assimilating himself into this hillbilly family in this trailer park in the middle of Texas, and insanity ensues. All I can say is insanity ensues.
Yeah, 'cause a lot of the real good bits of this movie are the reasons why it's NC-17, and that would be massive spoilers and just massively killing some of the crazy
Yeah.
surprises that happen
One
in
thing I
this
was
movie.
surprised by is that, it being based on a play, there's actually a lot of dialogue, and the dialogue is very well written and it has its own sort of character. It has a very Texas flavor. Like, if fried chicken could be translated into dialogue, it would sound a lot like Killer Joe, pretty much.
And this is where I'm going to kind of disagree with you on, because personally, I didn't really find the dialogue that much to be desired. I didn't
Oh,
find the
I
writing in
agree with
general.
that because the thing is, I didn't find it to be terribly interesting. I recognize that it's well written, but at the same time, I was expecting it to be more crazy, and what I got instead is kind of a chamber piece.
Okay, so when I'm thinking of Killer Joe, or when you think of an average movie, you might think of just the overall experience, or you might go by specific bullet points. When I look at Killer Joe, I'm thinking of a movie that had a lot of really bad things in it, and then a lot of things that I liked about it. And overall, I feel very mixed about it, because if I were to go down those bullet points, I would say that the acting's very, it's fine. Nothing too special. I think Matthew McConaughey really stands out, and I feel like he commits to this role very well. However, everybody else is just kind of fine, nothing really special.
I thought
I
everyone
feel
was quite
like
good, especially Thomas Hayden Church, who's pretty great in what he has to do. Has a
even
lot of
him,
great comedic timing.
I feel like he has his moments, but overall, I feel like the acting is fine. It's not bad, it's not meh, it's just fine. Nothing too special, nothing I really want to praise aside from Matthew McConaughey. Just they serve their purpose and nothing more. I feel like the characters are super one note. They feel very cardboard. They feel like they have little to no depth at all about them.
I feel like that was kind of
I feel like
intentional, but you are right. It could be a bit much at times.
But not even that. It just, but I'm speaking just because, like, with this kind of story and how unlikable all these characters are, I want them to at least be like, there's that whole argument that people tend to make that if a character or a main character is unlikable, I don't like the show or I don't like this movie. What's the point if a character is so unlikable? Similar to how people really do not like Skyler in Breaking Bad, where it just kind of
Ugh, I
hurts the
hate
show
those
for them.
people.
Whereas when it comes to an unlikable character, the way it that can work or can be effective is if those characters are still compelling or interesting to the viewer, regardless of how unlikable or how despicable they may be. And all these characters in this movie, aside from Dottie, who's very naive and innocent, are very unlikable and despicable in many different degrees, and also very
Well, actually,
idiotic. But I don't
There's a
find them
lot of.
very compelling. That's the point that I was mainly trying to get to, is that I don't feel like they're very compelling. I don't feel like they're that interesting. I just feel like they're trying to, like, Thomas Hayden Church, he's the kind of comedic, dumb-witted father. Emile Hirsch is the guy that wants something out of this but doesn't think things through. And when I'm describing all these brief little descriptions of these characters, that's all they ever are in the beginning, and that's all they ever are by the end of the movie. And that's like, they just aren't that interesting. The story is just very simple. It's nothing too special. And there's various other things like that, like the directing, I feel like, is fine. Cinematography is fine. That's nothing too special. Like, a lot of the stuff is either just kind of okay, passable, nothing too special, especially from someone who is considered one of these veteran directors who's directed a few classics of American cinema, that you might have expected a little bit more from it, and you're not really
Well,
getting that. Which, I mean, it might have.
this is where we might kind of disagree because, for one thing, you're right. All of the characters are very one-note, stereotypical, and can be defined by pretty much one sentence. But at the same time, they were fun to watch, at least for me, because all of the performances, I personally thought all of the performances were really good because they made these characters kind of fun and kind of entertaining to watch, even though they are despicable people. Like Thomas Hayden Church and Emile Hirsch, but you brought up that Juno Temple's character Dottie was naive and innocent, but actually, if you think about it, she might have some sort of ulterior motives, and she actually kind of has more depth and ambiguity to her character because it can be argued that she is actually not as innocent as she pretends to be,
And I
and.
disagree. I don't see that at all, to be honest, when I
Really?
saw the movie. I really
Especially
don't.
with that final line of the film, the final moment of the movie, where she says something.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Overall, I still don't really see it.
I don't know what to tell you because I think it's totally there.
I don't. I don't. I feel like everything about this movie just feels very simple and a little too simple for my own liking. However, while I will point out these things that I think are bad or done poorly or just done okay, there was never a moment in this film where I felt I was bored. I was always entertained. I was always going along for the ride. I was always interested in it. I remember there was a point towards the end of this where I was kind of like, wow, I'm actually kind of enjoying this for some reason. I mean, and it was, you could explain that just because that there's this level of unpredictability about it. Like, you don't know what's going to happen next. I mean, one of the opening shots of this movie is of Gina Gershon's bush.
Yep.
Just to get an idea of that. And
it's quite a close-up, and they linger on it for a few good seconds.
So right off the bat, you know that there's going to be some surprises ahead of you. And that's where I felt like it got out of the movie. And I still think that the one person that you should be really talking about
Matthew
when you
McConaughey.
Refer to Killer Joe is Matthew McConaughey, who, by the way, has had a really great year. Who in the past, I've never been a fan of Matthew McConaughey. I feel like he's been in a lot of romantic comedy schlock, and he always plays the same kind of character. Whereas after Magic Mike and this, I don't know. I feel like he's doing really well this year.
Yeah, not only that, you need to check out Bernie, the Richard Linklater movie, because Matthew McConaughey is fantastic in that movie as well.
I didn't even know he was in that. I thought
he,
it was
he's
only
in it.
Jack Black. Huh.
Yeah, Jack Black, Shirley MacLaine, and Matthew McConaughey, they're all in that.
But like I was saying, Matthew McConaughey has had a really good year, and Killer Joe just continues that. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's really absolutely ridiculous, appalling, embarrassing, stuff that could kill a career in many ways. And Matthew McConaughey just sticks with it. He just commits to this role so much. It's kind of shocking in some ways.
That such a clean-cut actor would do these unspeakable things.
Yeah, and just go hard. He really just
you had to use that wording, didn't you?
yeah, I did. But like I'm saying, like I enjoyed the movie. I had a good time. There's plenty of moments that have like cheesy puns or some good comedic moments or something like that that I feel like do work in some ways and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of nice little moments in this that I did enjoy with it, and overall I would say I enjoyed the movie. However, there's a lot of really crazy shit in the movie that also made me able to sit through with it and everything. But when I look back on it, I still feel like there's a lot of things that I feel like are just too simple, are too thin, or are just too okay, and I feel like it's both a good and a bad movie, and I'm just really mixed on it. I still am very mixed on it, but I feel more assured of why I feel that way. But oh my god, I gotta say that when it comes to a movie like this, where he really stuck with the NC-17 rating, and he has two specific scenes that just go crazy in ways that I really do not want to spoil, because for some reason I think this movie is doing kind of well for its NC-17 rating, for as well as an NC-17 rated movie can do.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like it's well, and I maybe there's more people that will be interested by it. I mean, but those two scenes specifically, I mean, if you didn't want to be compromised, if they wanted to stay as like true to the source material, whatever it is, William Friedkin definitely.
I'm trying to wonder how that scene would play out on stage. Must be really awkward.
Yeah, well, both scenes specifically, I can imagine, are very awkward. Because I know, well, it's already kind of giving it away, but I remember there's a movie that came out a few years back called Towelhead, and it was written and directed by Alan Ball, who is the same writer of American Beauty, and he created True Blood. And it was a movie about a Middle Eastern girl and her family who move into this Midwestern town, this very clean-cut Midwestern town, and she starts to like assimilate herself into life in the 80s, I believe. However, being a Middle Eastern girl in that time, everybody is prejudicing her. They call her names. They call her very offensive names. However,
like Towelhead?
Yes, like Towelhead. Like
ding, ding, ding.
And she starts to form this friendship with Aaron Eckhart, who happens to be a teacher at the school. However, this little friendship starts to become a relationship, and a little bit of a too close of relationship. And I never got to see the movie fully, because when I started watching it, I happened to make the very poor decision to watch it with my family, because this was when I was still into that. And they ended up wanting to cut it off a little too soon once it got into a starting to be a steamy scene between Aaron Eckhart and the little girl who happened to have this very pedophilic relationship. And when I'm watching Killer Joe, it reminded me of that, except Killer Joe cranks it up to 11.
Yeah,
just
pretty much.
Shows everything straight in your face. And there was one specific line that, as dark and disturbing as this scene is, there was this one line that has stuck with me ever since I saw it that I still find funny when I think about it. And it's funny in a really dark way, but I've got a sick sense of humor sometimes, so I had a
Yeah,
giggle because of
the
it. And
humor in this movie is really dark, so
it's,
if
yeah.
you like that, then this movie's for you.
But it was also one thing that really confuses me. So this is going to be a little bit of a spoiler, I guess. I don't know if you want to go into some spoiler talks at all.
Maybe, I guess.
Okay. So there's this one. So the scene that I'm referring to is between Juno Temple and Matthew McConaughey, and they're about to do the dirty, if you
Do
will.
the dirty. I've never heard that before.
Matthew McConaughey is trying to egg her on. She's still being very naive, very innocent. Juno Temple doesn't really see too much bad out of it, but he knows exactly what he's doing, and he's taking off his belt, he's taking off his badge, taking out of his gun, putting them on the table and everything, and he's telling her to reach forward in front of her, basically to grab another region. And he asks her age, and she says she's 12, which, by the way, doesn't make any sense to me because Juno Temple does not look anywhere near 12.
Yep.
And that's one thing that didn't really sit right with me in the movie because her character easily looks like she's about like at least above the age of 16. So
Yeah,
the fact
around
that
that
she
range.
says so the fact that she says she's 12 either sounds like a lie, either sounds like they're just setting up for this joke and that alone, or I don't know, because it doesn't make any sense to me. Because I know they're trying to treat her as a minor in the movie, but the 12 is really reaching.
Yeah.
I don't
Yeah,
know
I
if
could
that
see that.
sat with you or not. But that
I
wasn't the
didn't
line I was
see.
talking about. But the
See?
line,
Oh,
but you can.
wait. Yeah, continue.
I'm sorry, you continue, because I asked you a question about how did that sit well with you or anything. It just seemed weird. It seemed weird and out of place.
It didn't bother me too much when I saw it. Well, I could see where you're coming from, I guess, because she really does not look anything like that age. But to be fair, if they cast an actual 12-year-old for that role,
Yeah.
that would especially not sit well with me.
I guess. I know. Oh my God. Now this, yeah, I get what you're saying now.
Yeah,
Does that
exactly.
make sense? So
So I feel like
anyways,
there's a purpose for that.
I
Plus,
can
there's
agree.
also the fact that Juno Temple, she's actually pretty good in this movie.
She is. But the line I was specifically saying is that Matthew McConaughey asks her age. She says she's 12, and then he says, "So am I." Oh, ding, 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 ding.
Oh, you. Oh, McConaughey. Oh, Joe.
I remember I got a chuckle out of that in the theater, which, by the way, the theater that I went to is a small art house theater, but it was about like 40% packed, and nobody left the theater throughout the entire
Nobody left the
runtime of this
theater
movie, and
in
that
my
shocked me.
screening as well. They were too transfixed by. But you could tell that people were pissed off by the end, though.
I don't know about that. I think there's just still in general shock, because now that we've taken care of this scene, the one big penultimate scene in this movie, probably the one scene, well, no, I wouldn't say the one scene, but the
The
one of
main
two
scene.
scenes that gave this movie, the main scene that gave this film an NC-17 rating, happens to be one of the craziest fucking pieces of cinema that I've ever seen on the screen in my life, and will
Oh
probably
God,
never see
yes.
again in any medium whatsoever.
As terrifying as this scene was, I felt glad to have seen it in a theater
I
with other
agree.
people.
It's
That
weird.
communal experience of uncomfort is just unlike anything else.
As bizarre and outlandish a scene as it is, I almost feel glad for saying, "I've seen this and I'll never see it again." But it's not like something. It's not like a scene out of a Serbian film or something like that. It's purely ridiculous. I don't know if you wanted to give it away now.
No, but you know what? You know something not enough people give credit for is the build up to that scene is actually really
Yeah,
great. William Friedkin, you can
that
tell that
whole
he's a master of tension,
interrogation.
and he still got it.
That whole interrogation between Matthew McConaughey and Gina Gershon is so good. I remember getting really into it, and that's what made that what happens as the result of it so shocking and leaving my jaw on the floor and being so effective is because of that build up. It's a good like 15 or so minute long scene. That's just the ending. It begins with setting up this interrogation and everything after it, and then stuff happens shortly after that, and then it ends the movie. But it's just one long specific scene,
Yeah, one
not
long
one long
scene
take,
in a
just one
single
long scene.
location, claustrophobic and everything.
Yes. But that interrogation is just so good. It's kind of reminiscent to me of The Master, where it's just very repetitive.
You
It just
are
asks
kind of
very
right.
similar questions. Yeah, I was just asking like the same question over and over and over, and just trying to like break down a person mentally until they finally crack. I don't know. I liked it. It was good. But the actual act that happens, I gotta say, bravo to Matthew McConaughey because he really stuck
Yeah, you
for
know
this.
what? I'm genuinely gonna say this. Matthew McConaughey, best actor, Oscars, Killer Joe. He's in the running for me.
I'd say right now I'd agree, but
Yeah,
because it's not really that
he's
much.
magnetic in this movie because
Yeah.
the thing is, what he does in that scene is so morally reprehensible, but the interesting thing about it is that he's actually not the most evil person in the room, if you think about it.
Oh yeah, no. I remember
Because
thinking
the
about
thing is, at the very least, Killer Joe does have sort of a moral code, and he sticks by that. Whereas these other characters, they don't even have a moral code. They'll backstab anything and anyone and change that code as long as it's convenient for them. And that, like, selfish thing, it's kind of like about humans at their worst in that sort
Yeah,
of way.
because I remember thinking about this when I was actually seeing the movie, was that in like the first half or for the majority of the movie, actually, Killer Joe is the most sane person out of the bunch, and he's a
Yeah.
killer. Yeah,
Yeah, he's a
but yeah,
contract
what's it?
killer. And the most fucked up thing about it is that he by day he's a police officer, but he moonlights as a contract killer, which is just like how do you do it, Matthew
That's
McConaughey? You
pretty
do it
pretty
all.
brilliant. Some pretty brilliant writing right there.
Yeah,
But
exactly.
it's when it gets to that one scene and just the way Matthew McConaughey acts it out. I mean, it doesn't really make a lot of sense what he does or why he gets into it so much, but
You buy into it
hey, you buy into it, yeah.
because it's Matthew McConaughey, and he does the best performance he's done in years, pretty much.
As magnetic as he is and in that intense a scene, you just go along with anything that happens on the screen.
Yeah, and that's really important considering the stuff that happens. You have to go along with it, and you need a good
Yeah.
actor.
So yeah, Killer Joe, a movie I'm super mixed on. I feel like in a lot of ways is kind of a bad movie and kind of a good movie. It's very entertaining. Was never bored with it. I'd recommend it.
I'd recommend it. I'd say it's
I'd
more
say as
good
a
than
whole, I'd
bad.
recommend it.
I was
Yeah.
a little more enthusiastic about it than you were.
And it's weird because when I was talking to you beforehand, you were just like, I don't even write a review about this, and it made me
Well, the
feel like,
thing is, I
wow, you just
still
don't know what
can't
to
write a
say.
review of it because I know how I feel about it, but I don't know how to express it, kind of, without giving stuff away. So, yeah, it's a doozy. It's a doozy.
It is, yeah. Oh, and I gotta say, Emile Hirsch is really treated as like the punching bag in this movie. He gets beat up a lot.
Oh yeah,
It really
especially the ending.
and it can get really brutal. Yeah, like I
Yeah,
feel like
like
some of the violence can be a little gratuitous, which is one thing I tweeted before. Like I think that this entire movie as a whole is gratuitous on so many different levels. But
gratuitous
the
in a
violence
good
can
way.
get you sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, especially with its use of canned pumpkins. You've never seen canned pumpkins used that way before, ever.
Nope.
That's one reason to see Killer Joe, to see canned pumpkins as a spree murder weapon. I messed that up big time.
Oh.
A spree murder
Well,
weapon.
to lighten that mood up, I do want to briefly talk about the whole Juno Temple thing that we were arguing about before, where I don't feel like she really does have any ulterior motives, because I feel like the way she is established from the get-go, and every scene with the stepmom Gina Gershon, and everything when she's talking to Emile Hirsch and everything, she comes off as this very, like I said, naive, very childish girl,
Well, yeah, she does come across as
and
that, but the thing
especially
is, you buy into it, but it's kind of subtle the way she kind of like peels back that when you see her kind of whispering to herself when she locks herself in her room and whatnot. And like, there's a lot of very subtle hints at that sort of like maybe she's smarter than she lets on to be and whatnot. And I think that her performance carries that well.
I would really have to see it again, which I probably won't do to know what we're talking about. But like even the scene which I feel is really nice is when she's talking to Gina Gershon at the pizza place and she's describing her relationship in elementary school with a fat kid that wasn't really a relationship, but she likes to think of it as love. And it's just little things like that that kind of like hammer down this whole, wow, she looks like she's 18, but she acts like she's 5. Or she has the mentality of a 5-year-old or something like that. And even at the end, I feel like she just kind of got. Oh, I can't even say it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrapped up in the hysterics is the best way I can say it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it.
Mm-hmm.
But
which is why it made me feel like, no, she doesn't really, but maybe to some degree, I don't know.
I think you have to like kind of like pay attention to her mannerisms, I guess. And I know I'm not alone here. There are a lot of other people who suggested this as well that I know of. A lot of other critics.
Well, I won't disregard you completely. I just didn't see it when I saw it, so agree to disagree for the
So,
time being.
do we recommend this movie?
Yeah,
it's hard to
I
say.
Do. It's a
Only
very
if
it's a
you're
cautious recommendation. Yeah.
Only if you're into the squeamish. The very, very squeamish.
Also, oh, one last thing I want to say. Killer Joe is a really good movie if you felt like Gina Gershon was a huge asshole in Showgirls and you really want to see her get some revenge taken against her. Killer Joe is a good movie for that. Yeah. And I
Oh,
love
yes.
Showgirls. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
So I don't even. Oh, you know, it's next weekend. We got some good movies ahead of
Oh,
us.
yes, we do.
We have the new critically acclaimed horror film Sinister, starring Ethan Hawke.
Ethan the Hawke.
All this buzz is surrounding this movie. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, but the one that has even more buzz, because it's actually got a lot of Best Picture Oscar buzz, actually, from Toronto Film Festival and Telluride Film Festival, is the new Ben Affleck film, Argo.
Which is a movie I've been really excited about for months on end. Oh, I love the premise. I love the idea of Ben Affleck
And I especially love that it's
coming out of his
a true
Boston
story.
mold. Yeah, and that it's based on a true story too. But the fact that he's going out of his Boston mold that he's created for himself in the past two films, which I feel like he's gone a very safe route, especially with the town, which I liked, but I feel like Ben Affleck can do a lot better than that, and I feel like I'm hopefully going to get that out of Argo. And one of the surprising things is that people are saying that it's surprisingly comedic,
I'm pretty sure
which I
it
look forward
is,
to.
especially with that trailer where you have John Goodman being John Goodman.
Or maybe Bryan Cranston hopefully has some good lines. Who knows? We'll see it when we see it.
Yeah, from what I hear, the second act is really intense, which has me excited because it's kind of a heist movie if you think about it, but they're capturing hostages instead of money, so that'll be cool.
So I think there's a third one, but I don't remember. I
I'm
haven't
pretty
checked.
sure there is. Hold on. I'm checking. So
Oh yeah,
there's.
Snatched is coming out, which you gotta see. Hopefully that plays near you.
Yeah, you saw it at Sundance and liked it
I
quite a
did.
bit.
Really enjoyed it. Very
Aaron
understated.
Paul, aka our boy Jesse from Breaking Bad, is in it.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who happened to be in Scott Pilgrim, is excellent in Smashed.
Yeah,
Oh,
she's the lead.
and Seven Psychopaths as well. Really want to see that too. So many
Yeah.
good.
And
A lot
also,
of
our
music.
movie of the year candidate, Here Comes the Boom, starring Kevin James.
I gotta say, that trailer is really cheesy.
Yep.
Like, I don't know what it is about.
Don't you
I don't know
just
what it is.
love that inspiring music that plays with the fat man who tries to get into the MMA game? No, it's UFC. Fuck. Fuck.
Close. No, it's MMA and UFC are the same thing. But,
Oh. Silly me.
Yeah, MMA is the sport that UFC plays, I guess you could say. But
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, I don't know what it is about Adam Sandler's production company, which I think is the one that's distributing, or the one that financed.
Yeah, it's got Kevin James and Selma Hayek, both of which are grown-ups alumni.
But the thing is that I don't know what it is about those movies, but they somehow make digital look really, really shitty.
Oh, yeah, it looks like a
Those
crappy
movies,
movie.
those movies just look really cheap. And I can imagine it's probably going to be like the highest grossing movie of the week when it comes
I don't know. I think Argo will do well.
Oh, I think Argo will do well as well, but I don't know. Here Comes the Boom. Oh man, it's got that silly fat guy. Oh, he goes for the basketball
Well, to
dunk
be
and
fair,
misses it.
Zookeeper bombed, thankfully. So maybe that was a sign that people are getting tired of Kevin James.
But the Zookeeper also has a really dumb plot that I can see why people didn't really
This has a
want to go
dumb
see.
plot
Whereas,
too.
well, Here Comes the Boom has a dumb plot, but it has a very inspirational plot. It has that whole teacher, oh man, we got to raise the money so that the school doesn't close down. And they got Salma Hayek.
Yeah.
And that's it.
They got Selma Hayek, and that was it, I guess.
Like, think of it kind of like Kevin James' version of The Blind Side. It's a very
Oh! Except with more slapstick, of course, because it's Kevin
A
James.
lot more slapstick. Yeah. So you can see that that's why that movie might do well. Just a little prediction on Alex's part. We'll see if that comes to fruition and
I mean,
plays
we've been
out.
proven
But
wrong before. I mean, we
yeah.
wanted Looper to succeed, and Hotel Transylvania ended up stealing the weekend on that end.
Well, to be honest, if I was to judge which one would have won, I would have said Hotel Transylvania because it's the newest animated kids movie, and Looper is an R-rated time travel movie, which is two both niche things combined together to
But
not really.
Bruce Willis, man, it's Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis. However, Joseph Gordon-Levitt gets like most of the screen time, which I hope people are liking. I hope people are liking Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I hope he becomes like a good like a box office star. I feel like he deserves it.
Yeah. And I mean, oh, I forgot what I was gonna say. Oh well. Oh yeah, Looper, it's doing fine at the box office. It's not doing great. It's like Cabin in the Woods, where it's making a decent amount of money, enough to break even, pretty much, but it's not doing gangbusters either.
Has this weekend's result? I'll have to wait till tomorrow, most
Looper
likely.
actually made more money in its second week than Frankenweenie did in its first week.
So Looper came out
Yikes.
on top at number one.
No, not number one. It was like maybe at number two or three. And I think
Okay.
Taken 2 was at number one, because that
Oh.
made like 40, 50 million.
And I can imagine Hotel Transylvania was number two then. Wow, Frankenweenie didn't do that well, really?
Yeah, it
That's
bombed.
weird.
It flopped.
Well, it doesn't sound like it bombed per se, but
Oh,
we'll
it
see.
flopped, yeah.
But okay. Well, that's weird because usually Tim Burton having his name attached, he just brings in the fans.
To be
All of his
fair,
movies are
Dark Shadows
terrible.
didn't do terribly well either.
Yeah. Also, it looked bad. Then what was it about Alice in Wonderland that just dragged people into it? Maybe it was the
I
fact
have
that it was
no
based off a
idea.
property. Because I hate that movie,
Maybe it's
and that's.
because people like crap movies and hate good ones. Because, like, Taken 2 made a bunch of money, and that movie's really bad.
Yeah, because now Alice in Wonderland ended up becoming like one of the highest grossing movies of
Of all
last
time.
year, and I think of all time too. Yeah, that just
Yeah. I wouldn't say I hate it as much as everyone else does,
white
but it's not good. It's just not good.
that
That silly
movie
Alice.
tries to be fun and it's just not fun.
Yeah, and also that Johnny Depp dance at the end of the movie.
I don't even mind the Johnny Depp dance.
One
I'm
of
more
the I
offended.
think it's one of the worst things I've seen in
I'm
a
more
movie in
offended
a
by the actual ending, where the whole ending is, hey, we found a way to export to China.
Oh yeah, remember when that development was a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently we started
It's the
reviewing
sequel.
Alice in Wonderland all of a sudden. Okay, so we have a website. It's Guess what? We moved. We did that move thing that I kept teasing, and now you can find us. Wait, what?
We abandoned Blogspot.
Well, yeah, because Blogspot is
Roots the
kind of
curve.
yeah. Now it looks much nicer. You can find us now at cineffect.wordpress.com. Much cleaner URL. So you can tell it to your friends now. Tell it to your friends.
But we also are a blog, so why do and a podcast, so why didn't blogcast work? Wait, oh, shit.
What?
It's like 1:30 a.m.
Oh.
I was thinking, I don't know why. I was thinking, for some reason in my stupid head, I was thinking Blogspot was Blogcast. And I was
Oh,
trying to hide
silly
it.
you.
Oh well.
We're not going
Still
to
dumb,
edit that
but
out, my friends. We are
nope.
not going to edit that.
I wish we would.
Oh,
But I
maybe
get
I
this thing.
would.
Yeah,
Who
we'll see.
knows? You would never know if I did.
So either way, we're now at
We also
WordPress.
have
Better.
Twitters as well.
We do.
Yeah,
You can
so we're
find
going to.
me.
Okay.
You can find me at twitter.com/TVBucks20, capital TBB, lowercase UCS number 20.
And you can find me at twitter.com/CGRunyon. That's capital C, capital G, capital RUNYON. And you can also subscribe via iTunes, because that's a thing.
Subscribe to my blogcast. I'll give you a free pizza roll.
Okay, now we're definitely not going to cut that out.
I know.
We're
Gotta
stuck
make
with
jokes of it.
this.
Yep.
Raw and uncut. All of the awkwardness you can handle. Just
Right
breathe into
here
that
at Cinefect.
microphone.
At Cinefect. After hours.
After hours. hours so late.
The After Hours. The After Hours podcast for men.
Skinaflex.
The Skinaflex movies. Skinaflex, Skinaflex reviews.
Yeah, pretty much. We're really dragging this out like a pro.
We are.
Okay, so I'm Chris.
And I'm Alex.
And I guess we'll see you guys next time.
Later.
To take a last walk through the noise to the sea, not to die but to be reborn, away from a land so battered and torn. Such a mess. Every inch of her is a fighting mess. Giant pencil and lipstick tube shaped flames continue to rain and cause screaming pain and the Arctic stains from silver blue to bloody red as a thief finds the sand and the sea. It's strange.